November 13th meeting of the Palm Coast Volunteer Pension Plan. If you would stand, we'll have a pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Peggy, would you do a roll call, please?
Paul Buscacino.
Here.
Timothy Wilson.
Here.
Brian DeBona.
Here.
John Pickard.
Here.
Robert Schroeder.
He was notified, he said he would be here, so he's probably still a little late. Would the city clerk like to swear us in?
Sure. If you'd all raise your right hand. When I say aye, then repeat your name. Aye.
Charles Wilson.
Do solemnly swear that I will faithfully.
We have to repeat this.
Yeah.
I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully.
And impartially perform the duties.
And impartially perform the duties.
Of the Volunteer Firefighters Retirement System. And Trust Fund Board. As prescribed by law. And to the best of my ability. And that I will support and maintain the laws. And Constitution of the State of Florida. And the United States of America. Welcome aboard, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Well, I guess the next order of business ought to be, since we have the board sanctioned now, we're going to have to go through the process again of assigning officers.
You do that every 2 years, and it's time. So it works out just fine.
Yep. Okay. We need to appoint a chair, a vice chair, and a secretary. Look for nominations.
Make a move to nominate Charlie Esposito as chairman.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I accept.
Vice chair. You're the one who voted for him. Did you hear that?
I make a motion to nominate Tim Wilsey as vice chair.
I second.
All right.
Any comments?
Aye. No comments.
I accept.
Okay. And Schroeder is not here, but I do believe, well, we'll have to make that appointment later on when he is here.
Well, he's back on the board, right?
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do it without him being here.
Appoint him?
Sure.
Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah. Make a motion to nominate Bob Schroeder to the committee.
Secretary.
The secretary.
Secretary. I'm sorry. Secretary.
Mm-hmm. I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
So done.
Now he won't even know he's back.
Maybe not one of them.
It'll teach him to be late. Yeah,
that's right. That's what happens if you're not here.
Yeah. Everybody got a copy of the minutes? Any motion to accept?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes as written.
Second.
Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Chris.
Yes, sir.
We want to start with the fiscal?
Sure. If you don't mind, you guys, the copying is probably back-to-back saved paper, but on the second page, this is kind of a reminder. This is our new format. To be more compliant with the new rules that have come out related to the budgets and budget tracking and budget disclosure for the pension. This is basically going to be our kind of quarterly.
Bob,
congratulations, Bob.
You're the chairman.
You're the secretary again.
Oh. Okay. That's what happens when you were my
You were almost the chairman. But anyway, on the second page, you'll kind of see the quarterly
expense breakdown by the primary categories that we've created the new budget for 2016 to comply with all new rules and disclosure regulations. Off to the far right, there's a...
Excuse me, Chris. You've done this in accordance with the requirements of the state. And have we reported these yet to the people that have to get the copies of this?
We did.
Okay.
But anyway, this is just an example of what we'll see going forward. We really didn't formally enact a budget for fiscal year 15, which ended September 30th. So you'll see in the far right the budgets are zero, but in the future our actual budget numbers will be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And on the third page is the actual budget that was approved submitted to the city and signed off on and is currently out there in cyberland on our website, on the league's website, identifying what
and this was approved by this board before
at the last meeting. Okay. and this is what is actually out there, so in the future we'll see a combination of these two reports each month just with the expense tracking so we can keep track of how we're doing versus the budget.
And I understand, if we need to, we can revise the budget.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Just a comment on that. You got me down for $25,000. That's going to be $25,000.
No, it wasn't just you.
Okay.
We were just being safe.
Okay.
You can be 50.
I was going to say, I thought he was going higher.
No.
He wanted 100, but
I mean, I come every other time and no, that's going to be way high. But
Scott, we were just really basing it on just in case we needed more additional consultants.
Well, I'll do my best to meet your expectations.
Yes, <I'm sure. laughs> And it was the same thing with Doug, with Foster and Foster. Unless we really ask for something crazy new, we're not probably going to need $25,000. But
at least you don't have to revise the budget.
Exactly.
At that point. That's kind of what you had in mind.
We wanted to make sure we were covered and didn't have to go through the process. Back to the very
These are zero thing. Base, right? And after next year, there's no residual left over, you reapply it, right?
No, it's not. It's not truly a budget. It's an expectation of expenses. That's really what it amounts to. So it's your best guess about what we're going to spend the next year.
Uh-huh. Right. And yes, it would expire. Mm-hmm. You would do a new one for the next year. Nothing carries over or anything like
zero
that.
Zero. Okay.
Yeah. Back to the very first page. Just a couple things to note. On the very first section, we no longer have any of those other little accounts we had. Just as a reminder, we closed those out during the fiscal year. SBA Fund B was finally paid out, taken care of. No SBA Fund A. We had a little bit of money at Wells Fargo. Everything is now consolidated with our one account with the league. For revenues, we did receive our insurance premiums from the state, fire insurance tax premiums from the state, which we normally do in August and September. Just over $324,000 we received in two payments, which were immediately erased by our negative investment earnings for the quarter. Thank you, stock market. The administrative expenses are just listed there as one number that's kind of highlighted, the $8,135. Again, if you go to page 2 for the 9/30 quarter, you can see the detail of what those expenditures are. It would be the fourth column from the left. Mm-hmm. As far as invoices, there were no new retirees, during the quarter. As far as invoices, there are three invoices attached.
Excuse me, under the insurance that you were talking about, we're covered under the city's standard policies. Is that correct, or is it?
No, the pension board pension fund pays for a fiduciary liability policy. There is a portion of that that's paid by the city that can't be paid by the pension funds, mm-hmm. and those we get two separate bills for that. But there is a separate policy, fiduciary policy for the board.
Fiduciary policy means it. This is personal protection for the trustee members in the event of...
I guess it's more like an errors and omissions.
But it's not errors and omissions. It's very specific to this for trustees. It's fiduciary liability, okay? You're a fiduciary to the plan as trustees, and so this is a insurance that covers the risk of you breaching your fiduciary responsibility to the plan. So if the board were to do something that amounted to a breach of fiduciary responsibility...
Should we run or something?
No, not me. I don't bring my phone in.
I guess the meeting's over.
That's it. We're done again?
So, the example I always give of a breach of fiduciary responsibility, I mean, you know, if maybe Charlie had a son-in-law who fancied himself to be an investment manager, and you guys said, well, he seems like a nice guy, we'll give him $500,000 to invest, and he loses all the money. That's probably a breach of your fiduciary responsibility, since you didn't check him out before you gave him the money, and theoretically a member of the plan or even the city could sue the board and the individual board members for having breached your fiduciary responsibility. That we could make a claim to the fiduciary, the carrier, and get that money back because of the breach of fiduciary responsibility. But of course, we all know that if an insurance company pays a claim, what's the first thing they do after they pay the claim? They try to figure out who's responsible, and they go after them, right? Well, in the example I just gave, that would be the Board of Trustees. And so each one of you would theoretically be on the line for making good on that claim that they had to pay. Well, the little extra amount that Chris said that the city has to pay, that's to pay for a premium wherein the insurance company, they waive their right, what they call waiver of right of recourse. Mm-hmm. Recourse meaning they waive their right to go back against the individual trustees if, in fact, they breach their fiduciary responsibility. So that little piece that the city pays for is more important to you personally than the policy itself. But you can't do one without the other. So that's kind of what that's all about.
Yeah, and we, and Scott, maybe you can help with this. You know, one of the things that we talk about when we talk about board's fiduciary responsibility, it's sometimes lost what that actually means. And I think that you made an excellent statement there that it really comes down to potential personal liability for decisions that are made on the board. And that's really what that means.
Well, that's the risk. The other side is the responsibility. And, of course, that's the prudency, you know, investing prudently and your primary responsibility is toward the or is in favor of the members of the plan and their beneficiaries, and so that's where your allegiance has to lie in carrying out your responsibilities.
Thank you, sir. So, the invoices for approval, two relatively small invoices from Fisher and Denner attached, and kind of a year-end invoice from Foster and Foster also attached. Also attached to this report, in addition to the backup information, is our second supplemental contribution that we received from the state, which is a little over $98,000, copies of the invoices, and also the kind of final share plan memo and distribution allocation information that was already sent out to the board, but I kind of attached here anyway for included in the report. So other than the fact that we really kind of took a hard hit for the quarter in terms of investment earnings, August and September in particular, August was the worst month, September wasn't a lot better. That's really a summary of
the report.
If it makes you feel any better, as you know, I go to a lot of meetings and a lot of plans, and pretty much across the board, and Doug does as well, but pretty much across the board, everybody's been plus or minus 1%. You know, there's a couple of outliers either way, but that's for the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty much so that you know that you're not the only one who got hammered. Yeah. And it was a bad quarter and obviously not a good fiscal year, but Doug, I'm sure we'll talk about, remember that for purposes of determining the required funding, he's using a four-year average. So our four-year average is probably still well above what we're assuming we're going to make. So it's not catastrophic in that sense. Now, of course, here we're very well funded anyway, but it's always a concern, and you want to stay on top of the investment return. Okay. Do we have a year-end totals that report that we need to approve, or did y'all already approve that as well? You couldn't have approved that at the last minute. You didn't have those totals.
The year-end expense total?
Well, yeah, expense total.
Yeah, that's
through 2015.
For 2015, that's the second page.
This?
Yes, that's the total expense for the first year.
Okay, so this is what's going to get distributed to the... Well, obviously, you're the city, so you've got it made available to the members. And then a copy of this has to go with the... with the annual report as well, when the annual report's filed. Does Doug do the annual report, or who does it?
Yeah, this annual report comes through the league, pulls it together, so I provide them all of that information.
So you got this to them, okay.
Yeah, I provide them that information, and then we have it with the city, and then I'll work with Charlie to get a clean copy. What I'll do is I'll remove those last two columns and get a clean copy after the numbers.
Okay. Would you copy me on that, too?
Sure. Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
But great. As it stands, we're in compliance with your memo of instructions on what to do. Right?
Yep. Sounds like it. Okay.
And Charlie, with the website, we have on the city's website, we have historical actuarial reports and other important reports as it relates to the voluntary pension plan there. There's also a document that links you directly to the League of Cities, and the League of Cities has also created a website for our plan that has all of this stuff also.
You've been through that website?
Yes. Yeah, I've been working with the League. So they have created a website also so that the state can see, hey, look, here's everything, they're complying with, and that all kinds of stuff. So that's also available to the public, too.
And what are we supposed to do, monitor that every month or every
six months? Honestly, there's not a lot that changes. It's, when we get a new actuarial report, we'll load it up. And, when we get the year-end budget kind of thing, we'll send it in and load it up. So there's not a lot to do.
Summer plan description, you put that on there?
The summer plan.
Yeah, okay, so you'll have a new one of those. Yeah.
Every time the summary plan description is done again, we usually load that up also. And they contact me, Stephanie at the league contacts me fairly, every quarter, day. Are there any updates, what do you got going on here? Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot that changes very often, but we do.
But anybody has access to that website.
Anybody
so for the trustee information, and the information that you want is available on the website. And you have a website number on that, Chris?
I can email it to you.
Okay, fine.
But if you go to the city's website, under the budgets and reports in the finance department, there's a section for the Volunteer Firefighter Pension Plan, and in that section is a link to the league's information, and also there's a bunch of other information on there.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd make a motion to approve the three outstanding invoices for approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, babe. Are you finished with this?
Okay.
Legal review, Mr. Christensen. For your information, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No. What were you going to say, Charles?
I was going to say that the summary plan description. Each member had a copy for approval, and we need to approve it at this meeting.
Okay, would you like me to go through and tell you what's different
yes.
from the last time we did it? That's
mm-hmm.
probably helpful.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, the first change, of course, is on the front page, which is the date. We last did this in November of 2014, and what the law says is we have to do it every 2 years, but we're also supposed to redo it if you have material changes in the plan, and obviously, we made some fairly material changes in the plan, so I think you all authorized me to update the summary plan description mm-hmm. with the new information, particularly this year.
Right.
So the changes that we've got, and I'm just going to give you the main ones. The first change is on page 3, item E in the middle of the page, the supplemental benefit, the share plan. Obviously, we did an explanation of the fact that we now have a share plan and we have it being funded. This one's funded a little differently than most of the other ones we have around the state because that new legislation that we had, of course, had a provision that every police and fire plan is going to have a share plan going forward. It's not going to be like your share plan because your share plan is specifically funded, but we put the explanation of that in there. The next change is
the share plan as opposed to hours compared to the now required for all things. What is when we wanted to go share plan, we couldn't do it because nobody understood it. We had to go to the IRS and all that. Is that still applicable to the other share plans?
Well, the same regulations are applicable, but you remember the issue that we had with yours was the amount of money that we had and the limitations. the share plans that we're talking about creating for the remainder of the police and fire around the state are going to be fairly small amounts. Some of them initially will have some larger amounts, but it'll still be much less than your share plan.
And yeah, not only that, those are percent of pay plans, which is right. Different. This is a volunteer plan.
Yeah, remember,
well, that's the difference between volunteer and
professional. Well, partly it's just based on the level of your annual benefits that are pretty small comparatively. And the share was so large compared to your annual ongoing benefit.
So what we did was something we had to do anyway.
Yeah, and your rules were for a volunteer plan, remember, Charlie?
Yeah,
that was the big part of the issue that we had.
And limitation of $3,000.
Exactly. So we had a lot of different rules that applied to our situation as compared to the other plans around the state.
All right, so we have nothing hanging out there.
No. You're good. Okay, the next change that we had is we had a language, this is on page 6. We had a maximum benefit section in the last ordinance when we were still under 401A, and we changed the language, the maximum benefit language there, to comply with the 457 language that we're now subject to. So we made that. Now people are going to read that, and they're not going to totally understand what that is. But suffice it to say, we have some limitations. And as you all know very well, we have some annual limitations on what we're allowed to pay out, and we've kind of indicated that under that section. All right. The next change that we had is over on page 8 under financial and actuarial information. This particular paragraph only had one paragraph in it before. That first paragraph that you read there, a report of pertinent financial and actuarial information is attached to the SPD. That was there before, okay? What we've added is B and C, and you can see what B and C is. It's what we just talked about a minute ago, the requirement to have the detailed budget each year, and also to have the copy of the administrative budget and the report of actual expenses for each year. One of the requirements of the state law is that information has to be made available to the members of the plan. Well, I thought it was a good idea. We can make it available to the members of the plan by putting in the SPD. If you want a copy of it, ask the plan administrator and we'll give you a copy of it. To me, that's made available. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of meeting that requirement without having to maybe do a whole lot of extra work as far as getting it out there to everybody. Anybody can ask for it anytime they want. The next provision that we added, item 12, on page 9, this has to do with a benefit that we have in the plan with regard to health insurance premiums. If somebody retires under disability or normal retirement, not early retirement, but normal retirement, and this is only applies to firefighters and police officers, you have a right to get some advantageous tax treatment of your health insurance premiums. If you arrange to have your health insurance premiums deducted from your pension benefit, and the pension plan makes those payments directly to the provider of the insurance, be it the city's insurance or an outside insurance company, then the first $3,000 of those premiums are not taxed. So that's a benefit. Mm-hmm. And so I think we had indicated that, and it's in the plan. We did it some time ago, but I don't think maybe everyone has it in the front of their mind, and I thought it was appropriate to put it into the summary plan description so people are aware of that.
And that applies to us as a volunteer organization.
I believe so, yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. All right, and we updated the Board of Trustees was the same as the last time we did this, so those are really the only changes that we made. So we're looking for a motion to approve the revised summary plan description, and then we can get it distributed.
I'll make a motion to approve the revised summary plan description.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, I've got the original copy here that you sent. You want me to sign this now?
Yeah, you can sign it, then I don't know how you all distribute it, but,
do you require a copy?
I don't need a copy, no. It goes to all the members of the plan, all the volunteer firefighters.
Okay. All right, then I'll take care of that. Chris, does the city need copies of this?
I have the copy, the same copy, a copy of the same copy you're looking at.
I mean, with signature.
I would need it with a signature. That would be part of what would go up on the website. It's uh-huh. a signed document, so mm-hmm. sure. Yep, I would love to have that.
Do we need anything in here that says Doug approved has by the board?
No, you're signing it to say, when you sign sufficient. It, that's approved. Doug needs to provide, I don't know if you've already done that, Doug, Exhibit B, the little yeah. actuarial. Exhibit that's attached. Oh, is it attached? It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't attached to mine. Yeah. I was asked for it, and then it shows up, but I don't get it. So,
yeah, Exhibit A.
We have
Exhibit B right here.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so you're good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, we are in compliance with our own summary plan, correct? We have nothing outstanding.
I'm not sure what you're asking me.
We just went through a summary plan description,
right.
defining our plan. The only thing I'm asking is, as far as we know, we are in compliance with our own plan. We don't know of anything out there that we haven't done that we have to do.
Not that I'm aware of, but I mean, basically the summary plan description is describing what the plan says, what it provides.
Mm-hmm. With those minor changes since
yeah,
last
with
year,
the changes.
We, I mean, we've been doing it compliantly, so is that a word?
Yeah, I mean, the main change, of course, was the addition of the share.
Question is, we are. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I just wanted to validate that.
Okay.
Anything else, Pat?
I got a couple of little things. First of all, I did check online. Everybody did their financial disclosure form, so okay. nobody's amassed any fines, so that's always a
nobody's
good
thing. Nobody's
going to jail. That's right. Well, remember, you chuckle about that, but it seems like every year I have somebody who calls me in December and says, hey, I just got this letter from the state, and they're asking for $1,200. And
one of our first trustees did that, and by the time he was done, he owed thousands, and he wasn't getting any break.
Yep. They have no sense of humor about it. So that's why
we've
I'm very sensitive it. About that. But
worse than a credit card company.
Yeah. Maybe not. Okay. And the only other thing to let you know, we did finish. Obviously, we got the ordinance done, and the share has been adopted. Doug, interestingly, the statute requires you to have a share plan, and it says anybody who had a share plan prior to 3/1/15 is immediately compliant. This share plan was adopted on the 3rd of March of 2015. No, that's 2 days after that date.
Oh, that's just a 3/31.
No, 3/1/15. Oh. So you know, I don't know
mean?
The significance of that because
yeah,
if it's compliant, it's compliant. So whether it's before or after,
does that just mean that they get out of reviewing anything that was?
I guess I'm not sure what the significance of that is, but certainly our share plan should be compliant, and
it better be with all the Ice Miller work.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Yep. So well, this is obviously the state legislation that we're talking about, but
they're not going to.
But I don't think they're going to have any issue with this. So I think we're in good shape. I can hear Charlie's wheels going around. the only other thing I had is I suggested some proposed meeting dates for next year. Again, coordinated with the time that I'm up here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get the memo that I sent on this?
I don't remember.
Okay, if not, you want me to read?
Yeah, if you would.
Yeah, a couple of these meetings.
Sure, Peggy, did you remember seeing that?
No. It came out in September. We sent them out early September. Let me give you the dates.
Go ahead.
First of all, February 12th, May 13th, August 12th, and November 11th.
August 12th and November 11th.
November 11th, Veterans Day? That's not a good day.
Could be.
Well, I mean, unless we're going to go to the ceremonies and all that and come back. It's a big fire day.
Well, we may have to work on that, because I'm obviously up here. Veterans Day was, what, yesterday here, and I had the St. Augustine meeting. No, not yesterday, the day before yesterday. And I had to move the St. Augustine meeting until this afternoon. So,
I mean, we can always just make it like 9 o'clock start time, and that'll be fine. You know, but...
Well, 9:30.
Yeah.
So. Well, that's fine for me. I mean, we could actually do that right now if you want to. Just make it later. I'm actually scheduled
well,
to be
anybody got a
meeting.
Problem with that? No. Anybody who has to wind up at the county or ceremony, because that kicks in it?
No, we just do the first ceremony, and that's it. It's at 8 o'clock.
It's a city holiday, so you're going to have a hard time getting any attendance.
Yeah, and Peggy won't be here.
Oh, that's right. It is a city holiday, isn't it?
Yep.
All right. Well, let's take a look. I'll put a note down here to reschedule that, and we'll try to come up with a different date. Okay. I'd like to still do it when I'm. I don't want to have to make a special trip up here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that costs you a lot more. So maybe we can do it.
Hold that $25,000.
You got a huge budget.
Yeah. That's right. We have to shoot you that $25,000. So yeah, maybe I should do that. Okay. So we'll reschedule that one. The other 3 days are okay. The 12th, the 13th, and the 12th. Okay, so those are okay, and I'll put a note to reschedule that day. So it moved from Wednesday to Friday. Doesn't it move one day at a time?
Leap year.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yep. Every 4 years, 16 is an even year.
Oh, okay. All right. So reschedule 11/11. 16. Okay, so I'll just write down that those 3 dates are okay, and then we'll get back with you, Charlie, and come up with a date for the November meeting. We have lots of time, obviously, to work on that. So. All right?
Yep.
All right, that's all I've got.
You got anything else? There's a couple of things I want to go through, then we'll open these up. I got a couple of questions. And one has to do with the reclaiming of credited years. In other words, somebody that is a volunteer firefighter for 3 years, okay, and they resign, unvested.
Right.
Several years later, they come back.
Right.
And by virtue of the regulations, they are entitled to reclaim that credit and work 2 more years, and then they have 5 years of vesting.
Okay.
And that's sanctioned, as I said, by the ordinance, as I read it.
Yeah, I'm trying to read it as well. Okay, because your plan is not exactly like the rest of my plans, as you know. So when you start asking me questions, I got to read what's specifically in the ordinance. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. So the guy leaves.
Yeah.
He's got a few years of service, and then he comes back.
Right. And let's say he's gone for like 2 or 3 years. Okay. Under the share plan, and even under the old our other defined benefit plan, when somebody leaves, their accumulated benefit, unvested,
right,
slips over into the reserve excess account.
Right. It goes away. They don't have it anymore.
When they come back now, we've already spent that money, but they now have a claim against it by picking up the first 3 years, and we've given that money away. How do we account for that?
I don't know that they have a claim against the first 3 years. They can come back and get their defined benefit, but remember we have two different benefits.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about. Yep. Really, is the defined benefit.
No, the defined benefit is the benefit that's based on years of service times your $65.
Yeah.
So if they come back, they would get that again. Okay,
where would it come from?
Pardon?
Where would it come from? We've already given it away.
No, we haven't given it away.
We've been doing it all these years. I think we've been dropping the allocated into the excess reserve. That's how it got so big on us all the time.
It's not allocated. The defined benefit is not allocated. It would just come back, and they would get the credited service. the defined benefit credited service would be restored when they came back. It does say that if we've increased it, they would only get it based on the amount, the monthly amount that they had when they left. Mm-hmm. So they, their defined benefit would be restored. The share that, though, let me look at the share.
There's a forfeiture on page 26.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at, Doug.
2015-02.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about forfeitures. I'll let Scott read it and comment.
Yeah, see, that just says that it goes away. They forfeited it if they have 5 years of service. Or if they have less than 5 years of service, they forfeit it, and I think it says someplace else that they...
It goes to everybody else.
Yeah, it gets redistributed, and that's what you're talking about, that money's not there anymore because it's been reallocated to everybody else. So they would be a new employee for purposes of the share plan.
Not according to the ordinance. The ordinance says that if they come back, they get credit for prior years.
For credited service under the defined benefit portion of the plan.
Yeah, so it's
two different pieces. It's two different pieces, Charlie.
No, forget share plan.
Okay.
All right, this is not necessarily related to share plan. Over the years, since we've begun, one of our problems in gaining this excess was because people would come in, they'd work for 1 or 2 years, and when they were gone, then we took that money and we put it in the excess reserve account. Now what we're doing under the share plan is we're spending that. Anything in the excess reserve gets spent. So now somebody comes back and they work 2 years after they work five, they are now entitled to vesting, so they get credit for their 5 years. But we gave 3 years away.
The money, the defined benefit, the value of the defined benefit that somebody has and that they lose when they leave doesn't go into the excess, doesn't go back into anything. Basically, Doug every year does a calculation of the required contributions or what needs to come into the plan in order to fund the benefit, defined benefits that we have. And so if that guy comes back, he's going to, if he had 2 years before, he's going to get those 2 years again. And when Doug does the valuation, you help me out here, Doug, if I say anything wrong, but when he redoes the valuation, he's going to show that guy gets those 2 years, he's back, and he gets those two previous years, which have a cost,
and
the defined benefit. Because that's all Doug is really doing from an actuarial standpoint, is the defined benefit. He's doing the calculations of the share. But his main thrust, of course, as an actuary, is the defined benefit. And so he's going to show that this guy is new, and he has a liability which is going to pop up when he comes back, and Doug is going to include that in the total cost of the defined benefit plan for that year, and so that's how it would be restored. Share is different. He said forget about the share. Okay. I don't think he gets the share. Okay. The share doesn't pop up. He starts as a new employee in the share. But from the defined benefit,
the credited portion, service here is different than most other plans that are percent of pay based. We essentially just take what the city says they have as the credits as of each valuation date, and because it doesn't necessarily tie into when they came into the plan. They have to meet so many calls, they have to meet those thresholds. So we've got people in the plan who have on a strictly service based, you know, date in. They could be here for 2 years but still have a zero crediting. Mm-hmm. You've seen that on the share plan. Mm-hmm. Okay. And likewise, they could leave and come back and show up brand new and show up with 2 or 3 years. So that's not only different than most plans because you've got different thresholds for eligibility. The share is different than the defined benefit piece. The share is whenever you come back, you start up.
So it doesn't take into consideration the past years that they gave up when they left.
Right.
So it starts. So in this example, if somebody left with 3 years and then came back and put another 2 years in, he really only has 2 years for his share plan, not five.
Right.
Okay.
So I guess I would have a follow-up question I hadn't thought about until now, is because the share and the defined benefit are sort of de-linked with service. The city, in the same way that it gives us service for the defined benefit piece each year, I'm wondering if the city could give us credited service for the share piece separately. because they may not be the same. If I'm thinking correctly, and that's why I want to have a discussion, let's say somebody comes back brand new and they're here for an entire year, but they never meet any of the threshold for the defined benefit piece. They don't have enough calls, they haven't met any of would they still get 1 year in the share, though?
No.
Okay.
No. It's the same credit.
Okay, right. Then we're good.
But getting back to the defined benefit, I understand. I think I understand what Charlie's saying about, you know, it goes back into a pot and it doesn't go back into a pot. But theoretically, when somebody leaves after 3 years, you're actually saving that money because you wouldn't pay it out for the next two.
We're talking about defined benefit or share?
The defined benefit. Okay. Then now you're going to wind up, when he comes back and he's going to have two more years, now you're going to wind up paying that back. So theoretically, you've saved it by him leaving, and now you got to pay it out when he comes back.
Right.
So there's really, and it may not offset totally dollar for dollar, but theoretically, there is a savings when somebody leaves, and then there's an expense when somebody comes back.
But the point is that there's not a pool of money that is being used each year to fund the defined benefit plan. Okay.
Right.
There's not a pool of money.
So I kind of
that's what he
that.
Does every year.
I kind of
and
understand
actually,
how
yeah,
that works.
Yeah, and here, like he said, it's even different here because I mean, most places you got full-time firefighters and they work and everybody gets another year of service every year.
Right.
So he can predict that and the funding is fairly regular, okay? But here, it's kind of a hit or miss each year. He maybe is assuming everyone's going to get another year every year, but in a lot of cases, they don't. And so there's a little savings associated with that. And so if you have a couple of guys that don't get credit this year, then the plan has a funding savings, if you will, with regard to those two. But if you had somebody come back and they had 2 years, then you'd have an additional expense that would all be part of the funding calculation that Doug does every year.
And back to what Charlie had said, you know, there's still a fair number of people that come for a year or two and then stop.
Mm-hmm.
And they might have gotten a year or two of credited service. When they go away, you know, essentially...
No, they had no credited service. So I'm concerned about the guys who put in 3 years, do not make vesting. So, in essence, don't have credited service.
Well, you have some that come back, but you're also going to have some of those that are going to go away and never come back.
Right.
Yeah.
So they'll, you know, in theory, you know, all
yeah,
that
that's
stuff
right.
is...
Yeah, that's right. That doesn't present a problem to me because whatever... And Scott said we don't have an accumulated fund, but this is anathema to me because I thought all the while when we were talking about how quickly our reserve account was building all the time, one of the reasons was that we had such a transition. We were getting like maybe 60% turnover. And so somebody was in for 2 years... And I thought we were accumulating, not specifically for an individual, but we were accumulating money. When they left, we took whatever we accumulated and put it into the excess reserve account.
The excess reserve simply had to do with the prior state law and what the city could use.
Yeah.
And that was so low compared to what was actually being received.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it was all building up. It had nothing to do with turnover and... had nothing to do with the membership. It simply had to do with money in versus what the city could use.
And you got to remember, Charlie, that frozen amount, whatever it was, $144,000 a year.
No, I
we never came close, really, to even needing using the whole $144,000.
No.
We were always well under the $144,000. So even with the defined benefit and everything else,
yeah,
all the other
that's where I've gone this year. In its purest form, the excess reserve was the difference between the available money in the account, which was state-funded in two payments, right? Whatever that sum was, minus what we had accumulated or established as the frozen amount. So once we subtract the frozen amount from that, the rest fell into this reserve pot.
Right. But there's even more in that frozen amount, because we've never used all that frozen amount.
Yeah.
So even if this person came back, there's plenty to cover.
Oh yeah,
just the frozen.
There's all
amount.
Sorts of safeguards here. That not only is 20% withheld as a reserve for the city, but under new state law, the membership could very easily just raise that frozen amount that the city could use, and less would go into the share.
Yeah, remember we predicated the new share account and everything based on the old methodology with the frozen amount and what have you. But this new legislation pretty much does away with the frozen amount and the requirement to use the money for additional benefits and what have you. That's all gone. So really, we have a lot more flexibility, if you will, with regard to the use of the money that we're getting. And now, as comfortable as we were before that the city would never have to pay in, we can even be more comfortable now. Because yeah. now, if that were to happen, the membership could simply agree with the city that the city can use part of the whatever yeah. money we're getting to offset whatever they have to put right. in. So
right. the old, if we had the old pros and cons, whatever that amount is, if we had to say we need 150 instead of 140,000,
just agree to
the
it.
Membership agrees to it, and then the balance goes into the excess
yep.
reserve.
Yep. Yep.
And it's just a matter of moving that sliding scale
yep.
as needed.
Yeah, a lot more flexibility.
Yeah.
So.
Well, does that flexibility extend beyond the benefit to the pension plan? In other words, can the city in that case then decide that they want to take some of that money and use it for something other than
no.
the pension plan?
No, you can't leave the fund. No. Can't leave the fund.
Okay.
But it's an asset on the city's financial sheets that this overfundedness, mm-hmm. it's a credit anyways. They just can't release it to the general fund, but they get to record it as a credit on the balance sheets.
And for a little at a
which
level.
Which I can tell you, nobody understands or cares about.
As long as it's a credit.
Yeah. I don't think they would even. Well,
and
yeah.
I think
yeah.
for
yeah.
A small yeah. ounce of comfort, for every one person that returns to reclaim some vested time, like 10 people leave.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to balance out. We'll be
oh, no. I'm,
more than
I'm,
balance.
Right.
I'm sure that will happen. Right. The only thing is, just on that one isolated instance, mm-hmm. there's got to be a protocol.
Sure.
Okay, and if we're saying, okay, we don't care, we're not concerned, we have thought about it, so we're not concerned. My only question was, I see a form of payback here. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes in and picks up and becomes vested, okay, where does that payback come from? And how does it get allocated back?
Again? Well, they get it on the defined benefit piece. They get those right. prior years, but the share starts
yeah.
fresh.
No,
their
yeah.
share starts
but
fresh.
This is a problem that existed before share plan.
Well, he recalculates it every year.
But so. this isn't even particular to your plan. Okay, uh-huh. This language about people being non-vested and leaving and mm-hmm. coming back
yeah.
in defined benefit plans for police and fire all over the state, that same language is in there. Right. It says if you're gone, if you have 2 years, you leave and you come back, you can pick up right where you left off with your 2 years that you had before, mm-hmm. and. Again, Doug would, in the next evaluation, show that this guy, this, quote, new person, has come back and has 2 years of service, and that would be figured in the funding calculation that Doug
He's got 5 years of service. He had 3 before he left. He comes back with 2, and now he's got credited 5, and he becomes vested.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, whether he comes back and is vested or not, it doesn't matter.
Okay. All I'm saying is we spent the first 3 years accumulated reserve.
What's
and you're telling me there is no such thing.
But is it spent or is it just not allocated?
What?
It's not spent, it's just not allocated.
No, right. It's spent. It's been allocated to the reserve account. And that's where, the share account, because that's where it comes in. We clear that out every year. From now on, we're going to clear out the excess reserve, which may include some of the excess money coming from those who left. They were here 3 years. We figured they'd never come back. We took whatever was accumulated for them, put it in the reserve account. It's there. Whatever happens to it, it's there. Now, with the advent of the share plan, we are spending that down to zero. The guy comes back.
Not to zero. 250,000 is being left there.
No,
that's 300,000
is being
left. Okay, well, that's a big number.
Yeah, but that doesn't show up every year. And that's another question I have. Where the hell is that money? But that $300,000 has nothing to do with 2016, 2017, 2018. Somewhere or another, there's that block of money is being held.
Well, Scott and Doug, so before our block of money for defined benefit was $144,000 a year.
That was the frozen.
That was set aside, the frozen money.
Yeah.
That
mm-hmm.
set aside the defined benefit. Mm-hmm. We never really used all of that money. Mm-hmm. So in theory, for what Charlie's saying, Charlie, in that case, that money is set aside within our total funds for defined benefit purposes, and if it's not used at all, it's not all used, we're not putting that money that's not used into the excess reserve. That $144,000 is set aside permanently for defined benefit.
I understand that.
And so there's more there than we need.
I understand that.
So when this new person comes back, they're going to eat up some of that little bit of more than we need, but then again, some people are going to leave, so... You know, in essence, it's probably going to have no effect on that. So there is a portion of the total money that's set aside for defined benefit. And that's that, you know, that we, and we're using the frozen, but now, as these guys had said, we can move that scale up and down as needed. Mm-hmm. So if all of a sudden 100 people came back with 3 years of service and decided they wanted to put in their 2 years of service, we can just move that up as we needed to cover all those folks, mm-hmm. and it would shrink the amount available for future share plan distributions.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's a solid safeguard.
So it really has that, you know, you're never going to be obligating more than you actually have.
You guys are satisfied that there's no problem.
No problem.
No problem?
No problem.
No problem. All right. I'm going to do a little more and I'll get back to you. I'm not satisfied yet, but I can settle the argument here. What?
First of all, we always have that 200. $200,000, right?
No, $300,000. Not for that. That's in case right. The city gets in trouble. That's city security. So I'm taking that $300,000 as if it didn't exist, because it'll never show up again from a distribution point of view.
It may show up on the defined benefit side. That's why it's there.
Not with 120% funding.
Well, but that's now. You're concerned about some guy coming back with 2 years of service, which he's going to have a little tiny benefit. I'm not
concerned about the benefit. I'm concerned about the protocol.
You can never get to zero.
You'll never get to zero.
No. You'll never get to zero under the formula.
Right. Okay.
The last thing I'll say is the big picture here is the $300,000 in state monies is coming in every year covers the totality of benefits, aside from investment earnings.
Yeah.
Actual income coming in, there's one source, state monies, $300,000 a year. It covers everything in this plan, defined benefit and share. If for some reason the defined benefit becomes more expensive, then we simply shift part of that $300,000 over to the defined benefit and less to the share.
Where is that $300,000?
Right. That's the state money.
The state money.
Where is it? We got it.
Yeah, it comes
we
in
got
every
it.
Year.
Where
is it's in the trust fund.
It's in the bank.
It comes in every year.
Yeah.
Right now, the way it's been historically is 144 is needed for funding. It's even more than we need.
Yep.
The defined benefit piece, everything else goes to the share. If that ever changes in the future, we'll simply shift how that $300,000 is allocated. We'll put more to the defined benefit and less to the share.
We have been all of these years considering that our cost of operations was about $102,000. That's our cost. Comparing that against the frozen amount says we have about $40,000 in excess every year in the defined benefit program.
Right.
So I have no concern about that because I know it's there. I'm not worried about we can't afford to do it. I'm just worried about the protocol. It should there be a defined regulation that says this is how we're going to cover in the event that somebody leaves and comes back because it's an anomaly. We don't have that. We haven't had that yet. And we've got the first one coming up. And I just want to know that what we're doing is the right thing. And we're not leaving a hole somewhere. This has to be covered later on.
You're discussing not a funding concern. You're discussing a procedural administrative policy.
Right. I know there's money.
Okay.
I'm just wondering how do you, from a budgeting perspective,
The budget's covered. You're just talking about some kind of a policy that we're trying to wrap our heads around.
Charlie, I really don't think that it's a money issue if someone wants to come back that's already got invested years of service.
No,
it's not a dollar issue. It's not money in the bank issue. If the issue is, from a plan perspective, is that what we want to do for a plan? Mm-hmm. If someone has 3 years of vested service and has gone 5 years...
Not vested, 3 years of service.
Three years of service, and they've been gone 5 years, mm-hmm. and they want to come back because they're saying, you know what, I'll put in another 2 years mm-hmm. of service so that I can get my 5 years of vesting, so I can get my pension benefit, mm-hmm. and maybe, you know, it's kind of unknown really, but maybe participate in the share plan a little bit. The question is, from your standpoint, is should we have some kind of rule that says, okay, once you're gone so many years, whatever you earned is gone. Maybe. I'm just throwing this out there. Is that one of the things you're thinking about? Because I guess I could see, you know, from a skill set standpoint, you know, if you have certain skills and training, the volunteer firefighters have to go through, And if the good person has been gone 5 years and they haven't kept up any of their training and things like that, and now they're coming back and they want to be a volunteer again, how effective are they going to be? Do they have to go through all the training again and stuff like that?
Well, that's a personnel issue. That
right.
has nothing to do with the pension board.
It has nothing to do with the pension board except from the standpoint of do they consider any kind of rule that says if you've been gone so far, your years of service expire?
Well,
the plan speaks to that.
Part one.
Yeah.
Go
ahead. Yeah, I was going to say what you're about to say is per the ordinance, they get credited service when they come back.
They do. There's no question.
But
you can't deny it.
If we've increased our, what are we, $65?
Yeah.
If we had increased that, the earlier years would be at the rate that they had in the earlier years, but they would still get the credited service when they come back. But they would start as a big part.
It doesn't have to be that way.
No, it doesn't, but that's what the plan is.
No, about. I understand.
Charlie's talking about a protocol. I'm saying, the protocol is there. The only thing you have to do when that guy comes back is let him know about it.
Right. But I'm just trying to understand. I'm really not trying to put words in Charlie's mouth, but I think I understand what he's trying to say. Is that if someone's been gone for a while and they have several years of service under their belt and now they come back, should there be some kind of discussion amongst the board and amongst the volunteer group that says, after so many years gone, you start at zero again for everything? That's basically all I think what Charlie is trying to say in a nutshell.
Well, and I mean,
we'd have to change the plan.
The protocol is there. If you want to change it to that, then we need to talk about changing it.
Right.
Otherwise, the protocol is there. It's in there all the time.
Yeah, there's no limitation.
No, there's no. It doesn't say any time limit in between.
But it's something that if the board and the volunteer organization wanted to consider that, they could.
Yeah. And change the ordinance.
And then make it.
Yeah, we have to change the ordinance. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Tim, you still got 10 o'clock, right?
I understand what everybody's saying. I think it's too much work for the end result. I mean, the amount of funding. I mean, how many years has this plan been in effect? You know, 20? Let's say
first time call coming up.
First time in 20 years, somebody's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think this is so the
and
issue
and I don't
is
see
so small.
They
so
minimal.
the catalyst to that is they want to come back because of the share plan.
I mean, we can stop buying donuts and cover his portion.
And again,
you know, so
again, I'm not concerned about the money.
Right.
I'm concerned about did you do it accordance with
a
procedure?
But you just said something. You weren't worried about that, but you were taught. You said something about the share plan. Well, then maybe we want to discuss how somebody coming back gets into the share plan. Maybe the discussion is
there.
You have to be in here 2 years before you start the share plan. And that's something totally different than what we're talking about in defined benefit. Right now, if somebody comes back day one, they're at the same level as everybody else who's been here for 10 years straight, according to the share plan. But you may want to discuss and say, well, you got to put 5 good years in or 2 before you even start the share plan. That's a totally different discussion.
Well, they won't get share plan distribution until they're vested after they return, correct?
Mm-hmm. If they become vested.
Yeah, if they become vested. But
I mean, that's 5 years.
Yeah, those previous years would count toward vesting.
Of the defined benefit.
No, of the share plan as well.
So if they had 3 previous years, they put in 2 more, then they're automatically eligible for your share plan.
But remember, they don't have the dollar amount that they had before. They're starting with $0.
Yeah, but they're getting the same share as everybody else of whatever the annual excess is.
For the year of service.
For the year of the service.
Yeah.
So for the 1 year and then the 2 year, they would get the same share as everybody else in those years.
If there is even a share.
If there is any, and then if they retire and they say, okay, I'm out of here, they're only going to get they're only eligible for those 2 years worth of share plan.
Yeah, and it's a lot simpler, which is why I'd like to get this down. It's a lot simpler starting with 1916, 1915, because the first one that we went through, why we wound up with a share value was because we were commingling 10 years of service, and we had a accommodate how many years are you in, how many years are you in, and so on. So the share value was important then. Now what we're going to have is qualified people versus the money. It's a division. And we're going to do away with the excess reserve on that basis, I think. All right. I'm going to let it rest then, unless anybody else wants to discuss it.
No.
Okay. Another issue... And that's for you, Doug. Luis and Gil Roca are resigned, retired. And when do they start to see their share of the first distribution up to 2014? And then they've got the follow on year 15. Are you going to combine those two? Or?
They both retired as of September 30th.
1 year difference.
This past September 30th?
Well, Santiago on the 14th.
Santiago gets one more allocation.
And he on the 15th. Yeah.
Santiago gets one more in 15.
Right.
And I'm not familiar with the name you just mentioned. He just retired this year?
Yeah.
Yes.
And which date? 10-1?
9/30 or 10-1. He'll qualify for this
year. He'll get an allocation in 15 for as an active, like anybody else. And one final one in 16,
right.
He'll be called a recent retiree.
Yeah.
When we update the share plan for 15, he'll be called a recent retiree. He'll get one final.
Okay. That's consistent with what you've been saying all along.
Right.
Okay. Is the question to you or is it to the League of Cities on when will it stop to see the cut on this here?
It would be the League. Once the board approves, I assume the board's not yet approved this, pending us going over it today? Or am I just here to answer questions that have already been approved?
No, the board approved that already.
Okay. Then it's up to the League of Cities. I mean, this money's... It's once you tell them, hey, cut the checks, it's up to them.
I talked to them, it's got to be 2 weeks ago now. They were looking for the final approvals. They had gotten all the information. They needed copies of tax information. They were waiting on the first round of checks, and they were going to start cutting checks right then and there. So people should be getting their checks from that first distribution.
Okay.
I would assume many people have already received
them. Almost everybody has.
Okay.
Except for those two that are kind of late in the process. But all, I think, without exception, the retirees are paid off.
Okay.
Only guy hanging out may be Ralph because he had to give them his Social Security documentation.
They had everything that I talked about. Okay. They finally got everything that they needed.
Good. All right. Anybody have any questions, honey? Problems? Question. We have an individual who has a beneficiary, married, has a beneficiary, and they're getting checks on a divided pension plan. In other words, they're both going to get allocations for the rest of their lives rather than the 10-year certain.
So you're saying joint and survivor benefit?
Yes.
One gets it if they die, then the spouse gets it, or is it that what
yeah.
we're talking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Joint and survivor. I'm with
so
you.
So now the retired individual's beneficiary passes away.
Mm-hmm.
Can he appoint another beneficiary?
Most plans say yes. We just have to look at the specifics here. If it was a survivor benefit that he chose,
mm-hmm.
let's say Hunter joint survivor, and so whatever he's getting, she would get for the rest of their lives. Sounds like she died first, or you're talking hypothetically?
Well, no, I got an instance in mind.
Okay.
But.
Then most plans would allow a recalculation.
That's what I was getting.
He has to stay with that option. If it was the 100% survivor option, have to stick with it. But then we would have to recalculate if he wants to bring another person in.
If his wife, new wife or beneficiary, is significantly younger.
Year old.
Exactly. Huh?
That's what I'm saying.
It'll be a big hit.
Is that a payback hit?
It's always a hit if the beneficiary dies first.
Yeah.
Then the value of that check he's getting every month
yeah.
dramatically goes down because okay. it's for his life only.
Okay.
And then if we recompute to bring in somebody else,
yeah.
and then it's worse if that person's much younger.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's retired twice with a very young person.
Yeah.
So he'll end up taking a significant.
But not retroactive.
Correct. It's okay. from this point forward.
Okay.
And Scott, you confirm this is allowed to change?
Yeah, even on death. Yeah, because that's what the state requires. So that's what's in here.
Yeah.
Any questions on that, anybody?
Well, if the person's beneficiary has passed away, mm-hmm. and this person passes away,
that's it.
Then no one's going to get anything. Right. So if right. this person is really getting married or got married or whatever, they need to do this ASAP to be protected.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, he has to change his beneficiary form. Doesn't have to be a wife, does it?
Well, it's not beneficiary. It's the change in the joint annuitant. But yes, he has to do it. Doesn't have to be a wife. No, mm-hmm. nope.
It will not be automatic.
Yeah,
so
it won't
be
automatic.
So if he gets remarried but doesn't go through the process of coming to the board for recalculation and he dies, mm-hmm. she has no claim.
Right.
And he has to pay for the recalculation too. We don't pay for the recalculation. So if he wants to change his joint annuitant and Doug has to do a study, that individual has to pay for the cost of Doug doing the study to change the new joint annuitant.
And the more the person waits, you know, the more risk they take that when they're gone, it stops. You
know. Which is really what the benefit is designed to do. It's supposed to be for the life of two people. And that's taken into consideration when Doug does the calculation. So if you're substituting somebody new, which is really not what the benefit's designed to do, but the state says that the statute says you have to let even somebody who's dead, you can let you substitute somebody for the person who's passed away. And that's why there's such a big hit, because at that point, if your joint annuitant has passed away, all you've got is a benefit for the rest of your life. That's what's left. Mm-hmm. That's what Doug is saying, is that's why that's such a big hit, because already the value of the benefit has gone down, and then if you introduce a new person to it, then you're dropping it even more. So,
and if your wife is 20 years old.
And yeah, that's right. Your new wife is 20 years old. Actually, you're probably not going to live very long after that.
Anyway. Then maybe there's not such a big hit because his heart will give out.
Yeah. Well, are you saying if he does that and he passes away, that there is no beneficiary?
No, it's a joint and survivor benefit. It's payable for the lives of two people.
So
if both people die, it's done.
You can't change the joint then.
No, that's not what I said. I said if he doesn't do anything, it goes away. He can, if his joint annuitant dies, he's still alive, he can substitute somebody for the one who's died. But if he does that, there's going to be a big reduction in his benefit.
Okay. But if he accepted that reduction,
then he can do it.
He can die, and she can get the money for the rest of her life.
But it'll be a smaller amount.
Well, unless she's significantly older.
That's true.
Well, that's still going to be. If the first wife died when we recalculate, I don't care who he picks for the next one, it's lower, guaranteed.
Okay. So if somebody asked me that question, My answer would be, first off, there'd have to be a recalculation, and secondly, he'd have to pay for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And third is, if it's really happened, he shouldn't be waiting. If he wants to do it, he shouldn't be waiting around to do it.
Yeah.
There should be no waiting around.
Yeah, that's what he should understand, is something happens before it's affected, his new wife's out, or whoever he wants to pick.
Okay.
Charlie, that's you know, just to get an aside, you guys know this, but it's a very common issue. We deal with it with regular employees, that there are, you know, life issues that come up and beneficiary changes need to be made and they don't make them. And then something else happens and they're like, oh, well, that person died 2 years ago. Well, you know, sorry. Now whatever the benefit is with this beneficiary is on there, it's super important that those get updated regularly.
Okay, got it. Another issue, I'm going to switch around here a little bit. This is probably an old business issue. Bob Hudak, I think the board will remember that he made a petition to get credit for a number of months because of a medical problem. And you remember he gave us a letter asking for that. In engaging or employing a regulation that we have within the ordinance that says if you're injured on the job, you can get up to 6 months of credit for a qualified year. In other words, you get six months of qualified service, which would give you credit then for the year in which it happened. in all probability. The board, in reading that letter, requested that I go back, the chairman go back, and talk to legal about whether or not he was entitled to or could take access to that 6 months. In talking over this here with our esteemed attorney, he said,
"Was he here today?"
Yeah. He indicated that Bob's injury is not one that could be considered an injury on the job. And the ordinance specifies that you have to be injured on the job while performing a service to the city. And Bob didn't.
That was clear, wasn't it? I mean,
yes,
there wasn't
it was.
Any question about that.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. I'm just trying to remember the situation.
No. Yeah. Well, I had some questions about it, but you allayed them. So I wrote a letter to Bob Hudak telling him that the board had to decline, that he didn't meet the qualifications as prescribed by our attorney. And Scott had me make one or two changes, and one of the changes was advising Mr. Hudak that he could petition the board personally if he wanted to be on the agenda to challenge this decision, which he did not do. So he's got the letter sent out denying his petition for the 6 months. Consequently, he's lost credit for 2015. So this resolves that. Anybody have any questions on it? I don't think I have to call for a motion on that.
No. You already made a decision on that. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that one's done. Where does our public go? He's gone. Okay. Steve. I'm going to skip over the public comments. I'm going to bring up something that we've chewed on a little bit here, but I'm doing it under items not on the agenda. And I think you probably answered them this morning, but you know, in the event that it needs clarification, it's going to be hard for Peggy to figure out the financial aspects of this. So if we come to some sort of a decision, I'd like either you or Scott to write up what the consequences are or what the procedure should be, if it comes to that point, okay? And it may. Oh, and just as a reminder, we had the 202 to 2014 excess reserve. It was available. You did the calculation, and that was $1.5 million. So under the distribution of that, we had excess held for city security, right? That's where $300,000 came from. Came out of that 1.5. So that left us with $1,200,000 for distribution to retired doctors. That's already happened. That's done. So what we're looking at now, which is current, is 2015. Excess available for share. Not including the city security. I dropped that out now. That's somewhere else, and it doesn't show up in excess for that 2015. So for this year, I see, and these numbers are up. Yes.
Real quick, the 20% for the city, I know that we pulled out initially.
Yeah.
Is that a one-time flat?
Yeah.
That's it, okay.
Yeah,
that's,
and it all came out in the 2014.
Okay, I didn't know 20% a year came out, yeah. So, okay. Yeah.
So the excess available for share, not including city security, is $180,300. That's approximate, okay? But that's pretty much in the ballpark. So how are the 2015 shares funds held? Or where is that money? Are individual accounts established with deposits?
Yes.
That's how it's going to be.
We're rolling over today. We'll update.
Okay.
We'll roll it forward and the $180,000 goes to all active members.
Correct.
The retirees, they show up in this list one time.
Yeah.
They don't get any of the $180,000.
That's correct.
$180,000 is for the active.
That's correct. except for reason.
Are you asking where the money is? The money is still in the common fund. All the money is commingled together.
That answers my second question. Is there one global account for all active members?
Global account for all money that we have?
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about the excess reserve now for the year 2015, which is the $180,000.
Where it physically is in one account. It's all
one account.
Doug is doing all the calculations on paper, and then he comes up with what needs to be distributed, but it all comes from the same trust fund. It's all together.
Okay, which is a trust fund. It's not broken down by membership name.
No.
So when we set up
here, it says notional accounts. Notional accounts means on paper.
Yeah. Well, maybe the follow-ons will answer that. How will annual member status report show the value? We're going to give them out a green sheet, right?
Well, not only update this, which has the names, but then we'll have individual green sheets.
How are they going to establish what the value is?
Well, the beginning of the year will be what's on this that we've already provided. There was a 12/31/14 balance for everybody. That's what we use at the beginning of the year when we get the green sheets for 15. Then we will show their portion of the 180, and we'll also show their portion of investment earnings based on last year's balance.
Or losses.
In this case, there's going to be a loss. So last year's balance, which comes from this sheet, with earnings, positive or negative, plus their portion of the 180.
And forfeitures, if any, right?
Right, and there will be forfeiture allocations from other members.
We're talking about a second green sheet now, right? It's just for share account?
Yeah.
And they're going to get the regular
defined benefit
thing is one thing.
The share will probably be white. We'll make it a different color.
So we're talking about with 185. You said there was something else that was going to be. What?
Well, it'll be private. Let me run through it again. When they get the share individual statements for 15.
Yeah.
We will show, as long as they're still active,
yeah.
We will show last year's balance, and we will give it earnings according to whatever the trust fund got. We will give them a portion of the 180 based on their service, and then we will give them a portion of forfeitures from anybody who left non-vested.
Anybody who was allocated share money through the previous year that has left and is not invested gets reallocated to the
I thought we said that money wasn't allocated into the excess reserve.
Not defined benefit.
We're talking share money now.
We're talking defined benefit. It stays in the share. It's just redistributed to everybody who's active.
Because there was a residual
from
the 2014.
No. Well, if I'm... I don't know that this is the case, Charlie, but let's say I was an active volunteer... And I'm an active person, and I got my portion of the $1.2 million as an active volunteer.
Yeah.
Let's say it was $5,000. And I only have 2 years of invested. I only have 2 years of service currently. And I decide that, you know what, I'm moving. So that $5,000 that was set aside for me in the share plan, I'll never be able to have. So they take my $5,000 and they give it to everybody else that's active.
Well, dump it back into the
into that year and then allocate it to everybody based on the allocated allocation.
And that's what the forfeiture is.
Yep, that's the forfeiture.
Could you write something for me?
Sure. Basically, you want an explanation of how each member's individual share count will be updated each year.
The formula. Simple.
My next question was, how will annual member status report show value? And you just gave me that. Okay? Follow.
Yes, Bugs Bunny.
Will members be provided with an account value in dollars or as a percentage of the
dollars.
Global account?
Dollars.
And it'll be shown in dollars.
In dollars.
And my follow-on question to that was, should we devise a share plan procedure that will be consistent throughout the years? And can we do that? In other words, if we develop a formula now for this, that formula will be applied every year without change.
It's already established. It's in the ordinance.
And my letter will actually take from the ordinance. The letter is basically a user manual for that, but the ordinance already covers it. It's just my letter will put it in plain English so everybody understands.
Would you please?
Yeah. It's going to get simpler. I mean, once we have all the retirees paid out, now I know this year that we have some residual money that has to, because it had to be paid out in a number of years, right? How long is it going to take us to take care of the retirees, Doug? You know?
There's a couple that's already in the third year.
Oh, I see. Oh,
yeah, the ones that have the amount that were limited.
By most of them in the first year, I think everybody by the third year.
Okay, so yeah. 3 years we'll have some retirees getting it, and then after that it'll just be annual allocations to the current members.
Yeah, the way the league wants to do it is they've already sent out now the first year, right after January 1st-ish. Later in the month, they want to send out the second year.
So to the retirees?
To the tax year, then.
So 99% of it will be paid out by January 31st.
Yeah, that's what you were telling me, Charlie. So, so as long as it's not...
I think there'll only be one person that'll fall into the third year.
I think it was one or two, I forget.
So Charlie's probably 3 years.
There's several.
There was more than one.
Okay. So Howard is another one. And we're only talking about maybe $1,500.
Yeah, it's small amounts.
So then that all goes away. So then all we're talking about is the active, and Doug will apply that formula from the plan each year. All right? Have we gotten to the black question yet?
No, I will get into that. And we touched on it, and I'm probably confused. How is investment income and or loss accounted for? Question. Or statement, right or wrong. It is not considered excess reserve, right? I'm talking about the investment account now through the League of Cities. Every month we get a sheet that says how we did, right, in terms of income from investments.
Right.
Well, we will determine the return for each year on a calendar basis, net of fees, paying out the management fees.
And
that's the return we'll use.
Okay, and that shows up on the spreadsheet for the current.
Well, it should match the league's number pretty closely, but we will develop.
Oh, yeah, you're using it. Yeah.
Okay. So, but it's not considered excess reserve, right?
No.
Okay. And it's not used to fund the frozen amount, right?
The investment income?
Yeah.
No.
All that comes from state money.
Investment income?
What frozen amount?
$144,000?
Investment returns have never affected frozen amounts or state money or anything.
I appreciate that. And I just want to... Okay. Well, as I start to go through this here, I start to get questions in my own head.
Right.
I want them to find. Is it held to support the defined benefit? I'm talking about our investment income now. Is it held to support the defined benefit portion of the plan above the approximate 120% funding of the defined benefit? In other words, without any income, from our investments, just using state income, we are overfunded by 20%, 120% funding for that. That doesn't say anything about what we have in terms of investment income. That just says, this is from the state grant. We have a calculation by the state that says your frozen amount is $144,000. We know that our cost every year is about $102,000, which says we have about a $40,000 a year reserve within just the defined benefit program, which approximates 20%. How do we get to the fact that we're 120% funded?
If your question is, does the investment income or loss have anything to do with that? The answer is no. When the earnings, we'll call it earnings, that we credit to the share balances is based on the performance of the entire trust fund, period.
The entire trust fund.
Right, whatever the calculation is for the year, the entire, everything commingled, that's what gets credited or debited against the share.
All the assets are commingled and they're all invested as one big fund. So
one big
the one big fund makes a return plus or minus And that's the return that is applied to the share plan, and that's what Doug uses in determining the required funding, if there were any required funding.
Charlie, basically every part of this gets credited for their portion of those earnings or losses.
Right.
Every part of this. So it's one big pool of money. If we make 5% after investment fees, everybody gets 5%.
The DB portion has earned 5%, and the share plans have
that's
all earned 5%. What's not in there?
It does go into the. It does.
120% that we've been talking about. Hey, look, you. When we started this thing, we started to talk about how well funded are we. You said, God, you guys are the best funded thing around. There's maybe one other. Okay, well, what are we looking like? He said, well, you look like you're 120%. Right? So where then does that financial income come from the investments? And what I'm telling you, I'm sorry you put it that way. What I'm saying is that I can get to 120% just within the allocations that we get from the state. The state says we got $144 that we have to apply of that money to the excess reserve. Put it differently. I said it here. The excess reserve is considered to be the difference between the total annual state funding and the established frozen amount. It also includes unvested accumulations. And that's somehow rather debatable, so I'll take that out. I get to 120% funding of this program just based on state income.
Well, the only thing, if I'm understanding what you're saying, well, what about all the income that we earn on the money that we have attributable or that's there to pay the defined benefits?
Yeah.
The return that we earn on that portion of the money goes to increase the overfunding of the plan, wouldn't it, Doug? Because the only thing that the share plans are going to get is the return on the amount of money that is in each individual share account each year. Does that make sense?
The return that we allocate, let's say the entire plan, all assets, the totality, commingled, gets 2% return. And everybody's share account gets 2%.
Gets 2%, right.
But
the defined benefit and the money that's there to pay the defined benefits, that has also earned a 2% return as well, which Doug is assuming we're going to make 7, 8, 7, 6, 5.
And so has the city money.
Yep. And the city money does too?
So
the city's not putting any money.
No. The city, the set-aside.
Yeah. That's
so every bucket, Charlie, the share plan, the defined benefit plan, and then the city reserve gets the $300,000, gets their, whatever the return is, it gets their portion of it.
Which then falls in, just from the defined benefit perspective, it drives this 120% way up, I think, anyway.
It ultimately will. I mean, we realized that when we did this, is that we were, you know, like it or not, we were always going to be chasing the fact that we were probably going to begin to accumulate money again.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we knew we were going to do that, but, I mean, we've alleviated some of the problem by what we've done, but, you know, I think we talked about, you know, years from now, we may have to take another look at this and see if there's, what if anything else we need to do.
Yeah, as the fund grows, also the reserve portion should grow also.
Right, and the liabilities are going to probably grow too.
Yeah.
Right, and the hope was that this would, you know, I mean, albeit an altruistic hope, that more people would volunteer.
Yeah.
You know, that
well, the whole purpose.
You know, we've got this really nice thing here. Come and volunteer, and we'd like to have more volunteers. You know, but you know, how realistic that is in the end, I don't know.
I was in Bunnell the other night, and they were talking about your because they have a volunteer program there, and it's the benefits aren't that good. And I don't know. Gary Hughes was there, and he said he used to work here. For your volunteer program, and he said, "Well, I should have stayed there. Their program is really good." So you know, it's becoming known the fact that y'all have done, you know, a really great job in providing benefits for the volunteers.
Good.
Scott, can I ask you, Scott and Doug, while we're on this question, because this comes up periodically, and I think I asked it before, and I can't remember the answer. Because of the, you know, obviously we have ongoing union negotiations between the city and the firefighters. Is there a way for the paid firefighters to only participate in the share plan portion? I don't remember.
In this share plan?
Yeah. If we were to modify, I mean, you know, we part of the issue is that the city council, outside of the volunteers, is dead set against providing defined benefit to anybody outside of the volunteer firefighter pension. But something like a share plan, which is not a fixed.
The problem with giving you an answer, quite frankly, as you know, this situation here is different than what we have anyplace else. And as you know, we had that question about whether we could really have a standalone volunteer plan with having the full-time firefighters not in it. But the basic tenet with regard to Chapter 175 is that you have to provide a defined benefit before you're eligible to use the state money for those individuals. So I have a feeling the state would say, no, you'd have to fold those folks into the defined benefit portion of the plan or provide them and since they're full-time, you'd have to provide them with the minimum benefit in Chapter 175 on the defined benefit side before they'd be able to share in the share. We'd have to get a reading from the state.
Yeah. They'd have to give a variance. If you want to think of it that way, you'd probably have to get your own determination letter from Tallahassee before that could be enacted.
I'm not saying that, but I've been asked it again, and that's what I thought the answer was. But I just want to make sure I'm clear on it.
Somebody's tired me yet?
Oh, I thought that was the finale on the
board. I got my fireworks.
There's four more boards over there. I can't flip them.
Give me a quiz, too.
I think the hard part for our plan, as opposed to a 401k or an IRA plan, is that there is no separate statement. You know, I mean, there's no person doesn't have a separate account, that this is their account. They just get a portion of the whole pool. And a lot of times that's what drives...
But they have a determined amount.
They have a determined amount. And we can tell them what the determined amount is, but they can't go to their computer and say, well, what is it today?
No.
You know what I mean? They only know once a year what their new amount is for that point going forward.
But the allocations are made once a year, so that's the reason. Yeah.
Right. I understand. But that's the part that's hard for some people is that they're... You know, especially in today's day and age, you can go to your computer at any time and see, okay, my retirement is up, it's down, I got to work 3 more years, oh no, I can retire a year earlier, you know, whatever. And whereas this, you know, when you have this kind of the way our share plan is going to work, people are really only going to know really
well. Well, they're only 1 year lagging.
Right.
But you know, you could, for the folks in the share plan, you could provide everybody with a quarterly return, which you get from the league, right? And a year-to-date return, fiscal year-to-date return. So if they know what their balance was the previous year, which they would have a statement to that effect, I mean, they could do a little calculation and see how their share plan is doing, because they know their share plan is making the same return as the overall plan document.
Yeah, the problem with that is when the first quarter is a good quarter, everybody's going to be happy. And when the second quarter is a
good
quarter.
Well, it is what it is. We report to them good and bad news.
I understand what you're saying.
But we could provide that through the year. Yeah. Happy holidays, Tim. Thanks, you too. Take care. We'll see you next year.
I got one last issue. Tim, I'll give you the headline on it.
Go ahead.
With respect to retirement plan and the fact that we have people who vest in our plan before they reach the age of 30, okay? So they are now entitled to retirement when they reach the specified retirement or meet the retirement criteria,
right.
Which means you may be keeping an account open for 30 years for them.
Yep.
which I would imagine is some sort of an administrative burden, and it's also a pain in the butt for the guys who has it coming. Is there any form or any process or procedure whereby they could opt for a payout on that?
No.
Giving them out?
No. What you have is a retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
The IRS has rules with regard, I mean, you know, your IRA, what if you take your money out of your IRA before your mm-hmm. retirement age? Mm-hmm. You have a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And the same kind of rules would apply to this.
Is
it's designed
penalty?
As a retirement plan.
Is it a penalty or is it abolishment of your other interest?
No, there's a penalty associated. If you take money out of your IRA before the age that you're allowed to take money out, there's a penalty.
What about, say, a $5,000 cash out limit? I wonder if that applies here. The small benefit exception.
There's usually a small.
That's what I meant.
And that you may be able to.
Some plans have it, or especially here, you get somebody young enough in that sense.
Yeah, but if they're still working. They're still a member
I think
of the
Charlie.
No.
They're gone.
They're gone. They're leaving us.
Say they have a 5-year benefit, so 5 times 65,
yeah.
And they're 30 years old, but retirement's 55. If we do a present value on it, we can say, well, that's $3,500. And the board could say.
Yeah, I'd have to look at that and see what we can do.
Could you do that?
Something. I thought we were talking about somebody
still
that's active.
And the person getting it.
They may still take a penalty. Let's say we allow this cash out. If they roll it over to a qualified vehicle, fine. They take it as cash, there'd be a withholding tax on it.
Yeah.
You could.
Some plans have the small benefit provision.
Can we just give guys an option to take couple of $1,000 now rather than wait 30 years for the benefit.
But then
the thing that bothers me about that is somebody could leave or they miss a year and then they take their money and then they're back the next year and so they're taking the money out. They're playing the system.
If you did that, you would have to be careful that they don't come back fresh 2 years later with 3 years past service, say.
But they'd have to start at zero.
They absolutely would have to start at zero then.
Yeah.
But the share plan amount, if they had amounts of the share plan, you would pay that. That's going to be way over $5,000 potentially, with the number of people we have getting part.
Well, that might be the issue. Is that because of the share and how fast it grows, that might bump into the limitation in a volunteer plan, so that there is no such thing as a small benefit cash out if you combine the two.
Yeah.
So it might be kind of a moot point to attempt that. On average, a 5-year member, even if they come in at age 25 and leave at 30, the share plus the cash out on the defined benefit might blow through a limitation the IRS allows for a cash out. That's my guess.
Yeah, you're not talking about the $3,000 maximum limit. You're talking about something else.
They're total.
Well, just that the totality of whatever cash value would leave the fund
mm-hmm.
might exceed the small benefit limit, which is typically $5,000. The share plan alone might be almost worth that.
Right. If they have $5,000 in the share plan and the present value of the benefits is $3,000, they're at $8,000 right there.
Right. So then we would have to start thinking about, okay, do those two things combined violate a small benefit cash out provision? So we might be getting into more complicated waters here if we.
And we got to remember, you can't roll over
mm-hmm.
the share plan part of it. You're not allowed to roll that over. It has to be taken as a taxable benefit. You can't roll it over. So this gets crazy complicated.
Yeah, that's different with this situation than it is with the rest of the plans that we have.
We're kind of talking out loud here. If we want to go this direction, it almost sounds like a nice Miller kind of a project once again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
25,000 is looking better.
Yeah. I knew Scott would find a way to spend
it. Yeah, but I wouldn't get it. Yeah.
I'm just thinking out loud here from everything that's gone on.
Because that sounds like a super complex issue.
Yeah, and remember, it's because this is a different kind of plan than the 401A plans that we basically deal with. So,
Could you just take a little dive into it and just give us a kind of a synopsis, whether this is a complicated thing or... whatever.
It's already complicated.
I just like to be able.
Huh? It's already complicated. We haven't even left the room.
The other thing I can tell you.
Well, that's their job to make it look complicated.
Charlie, the other thing I can tell you is that city council typically has been very against allowing any kind of early distributions out of retirement funds, because the money is supposed to be there for retirement. So that's going to be another issue.
Yeah. I'm not anxious to do this, but I want to be able to answer the question.
Yep.
Okay, and we've covered it, we've thought about it, and we've developed a policy one way or the other. At least it's something to fall back on. No, you can't, because.
Well, when in doubt, just say no, and they go away.
Not asking.
Well, you can back it up and say the board's basically adopted the philosophical policy of the city, which is defined benefits intended for a life annuity, not as a cash out.
These monies are entitled for retirement income, not for.
Okay. Unless there's anything else, anything anybody else wants to bring up?
Doug, you can talk it out.
Huh?
Well, I've been talking.
You put us through our paces today, Charlie.
It's a Friday pop quiz, I'll tell you what.
You got anything else that I failed to ask that you think should be asked?
I don't think so. You guys are pretty thorough.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Can I second that? All right,
second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, Tim.